Okay, so the mind, how does it become impure? So we have talked in the previous weeks, but I'll summarize. There are two main impurities of the mind. One is negative thoughts, like anger, greed, jealousy, hatred. That is one aspect of negativity. And then the second is excessive agitation of the mind, excessive disturbance. And the flow of the mind is compared to the flow of river. Just as a river is a flow of water. If there is no flow of water, you won't call it a river. If it's a stationary water, you call it a lake or a pond or a swimming pool. But continuous flow of water is called a river. So in the river, there could be three kinds of problems. As we have said, there could be the quality, the quantity, or the direction. Like a river may be very dirty, may be polluted, as we find nowadays people throw so much pollution into the river and into the air. So our air and water is continuously polluted. So that is one pollution of the river. That is the quality of the water is dirty. The second is the quantity of water. Say if there is too much uncontrolled water going in a particular direction, that will create a flood. Also, the water, when it's directed in a particular direction, can generate electricity. As you know the what we see in the Hoover Dam in Nevada, and that can benefit a lot of people. So the mind also is a flow of thoughts. Just as a river is a flow of water, mind is a flow of thoughts. And if there are no thoughts, then the mind is said to be in silence, in the state of no mind. Now, there are three kinds of impurities in our thoughts. The quality of the thoughts, the quantity of the thoughts, and the direction of the thoughts. So just as a river can be dirty and polluted, our mind can also have dirt and pollution, and that is the quality of the thoughts. If you have anger or greed or jealousy, lack of love, talking about lack of love, this boy was welcoming his grandma who had come to visit, his mother's mother. She had come to visit. He says, "Grandma, I'm so happy you're here." He runs and gives her a big hug, and she's happy too. "Yes, son, I'm so glad to see you." He says, "Grandma, now that you are here, I'm waiting for Dad to perform a trick." She said, "What? What do you mean Dad will perform a trick?" "Well, Dad was telling Mom that if your mother came again to visit, I will be climbing the walls." So that is not love, but filling our heart with love for all beings. And that is how you improve the quality of the thoughts, by love, by compassion, by sharing, by unselfishness. And the best way to purify the quality of your thoughts is by remembering God. When you remember God, He, if you remember, is all love, all compassion, all kindness, whatever we have in this earth is His gift to us. This beautiful earth, you know, the sun, the moon, the stars, the air, the water, the rain, the snow, the beautiful flowers, the valleys. If you drive to Fraser Park these days, you see this beautiful valley of flowers. It's all His gift to us. My body, my mind, my ability to think, my ability to function, everything is given to me by Him. If He was not in me as life, I would not be functioning. So remembering God with love and gratitude, and just for no reason, don't only go to God when you have finals. Oh, that's good. If you have finals and you go to remember Him, that's wonderful. But don't only remember Him at finals. Even remember Him when the semester starts. Even remember Him in the summer vacation. The more you remember God with love, He purifies your heart. They say surrender your heart to God with love. He will purify it and return it back. So chanting the name of God, it doesn't matter which form, whether you remember Jesus or Allah or Guru Nanak or Shankaracharya or Krishna or Shiva, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter which form, doesn't matter which book you read, doesn't matter in which language you remember him, whether you remember him in Latin or Greek or English or Sanskrit, it doesn't matter. Spanish, which building you worship in, whether it's a church or a temple or a mosque or even in the open air. You just sit in the open air and you see God in all the flowers and the trees. You go to Hart Park and see him in the river. So main thing is to remember God. And whatever form, if you remember him as Jesus on the cross, you remember him as Krishna playing the flute, you remember him as Buddha sitting in meditation, it doesn't matter. Remembering God is the best way to purify the quality of your thoughts. Now, how about the quantity? Remember we said if the thoughts are too much, it creates agitation in the mind. My mind gets disturbed. I get angry. I get upset. I am stressed. And that's when people go to the psychiatrist or take drugs or take sleeping pills or alcohol or all these recreational drugs. You know why? I want to chill out. No, it's true. In the olden days, it used to be LSD, and now it is marijuana and heroin and cocaine. So all these drugs are taken because my mind is upset. My mind is too agitated. I am stressed out and I need to calm down. So these are wrong methods. They say you can quieten your mind and reduce the quantity of your thoughts by service, by giving others, by being unselfish, by reducing your greed and anger and jealousy and sharing. And the more you develop these positive qualities, you will find that your mind will become quieter, will become less agitated. So the quality by remembering God, the quantity by service, by developing positive values. And how do you change the direction of your thoughts? That's the third one. Just as you change the direction of a river to benefit the people. So when you change the direction of your thoughts, you do that through meditation. Through meditation and through being aware that my thoughts at this moment are going in a wrong direction. I'm developing anger. I'm developing hatred. I'm developing jealousy. So being aware. And through meditation, if you meditate on a regular basis, what you will find is that your thoughts, which are pointing outside in the world, you know, wanting, possessing, and acquiring, through meditation, we practice diverting the attention of the thoughts inwards. So as your thoughts go inwards, towards the Lord within, towards the silence, towards the peace, through meditation, through prayer. In fact, it's very interesting. When we go to a church or a temple to pray, and we are looking at whether maybe it's Jesus on the cross or Krishna or whoever, and you should be looking at that particular statue. And we start by looking at that statue or that form of God, but then what instantly happens, your eyes close. You should be looking at that form. No, but you are looking inward. Because ultimately, God is within us as life, as consciousness, as the inner presence. So find him within. Of course, he's there in the church and temple and mosque. He's there in Bethlehem and Mecca, but he is within me as life. So change the direction of your thoughts and go inward. And as you practice going inward, you will find that your thoughts will become purer, will become better. So that is how we control the thoughts. People say, I sit for meditation and my mind runs. I can't control it. It runs. But who is giving power to the thoughts? Who is giving power to the mind? Me. When I'm in deep sleep, does my mind run? No, I don't even know anything. In dream, it is different. But when I'm in deep sleep, or when I'm under anesthesia, then also the mind does not run. The mind starts running the moment I become awake. So I am the one who gives power to the mind. So know that I have the ability to control my mind. I have the ability to purify my mind. Last week we had talked a little bit about this verse number 19, which we'll done half of that. We'll do it again. Those who have the book, verse number 19, page 36. Asankalpa jayet kamam, क्रोधं काम विवर्जनात् अर्थानर्थे क्षया लोभम् भयं तत्वावमर्शनात्. We talked about last week about desire, which is kamam, asankalpayat. By not developing fanciful thinking, by fancying that this object will give me happiness or that object, you can control the desires. And we talked in detail about that last time. I won't spend too much time on it. If anybody wishes, they can listen to the talk. The website is firstpower.info. How do we control our desire? Through not expecting that by any objects I will get happiness, but happiness comes from within. And then how do we control anger? The desire leads to anger, greed, and fear. Anger is controlled by controlling desire. So desire is controlled by removing fanciful projections, and anger is reduced by reducing desire. How do we reduce greed? By seeing that wealth, when not properly used, can cause anarth, can cause a lot of problems in me and in society. So when you see that, then you can control greed. How do we control fear? By seeing the reality, by knowing what is true. So we'll spend a little bit talking about this. As we had talked last week, I want something, I desire something, and I don't get it for whatever reason. Maybe I didn't do a good enough job, or somebody came in my way. I wanted to win the race and I couldn't because somebody ran faster, or I got sick, or somebody tripped me. Or it could be anything. I wanted to be successful in my class or in my business or in my work. So when my desire for a particular object becomes so strong, and especially if the desire is not a right desire, if the desire is wrong, I wanted to get something, you know, and I would ready to do anything. And when that desire gets thwarted by a situation, or it could be a situation, or it could be a person, then I get angry. Why did I not get it? Why did so-and-so get it? Why does he? And so that anger leads to anger within, where it bothers my own peace of mind, where I get disturbed, I get upset, I get agitated. But then the anger also transfers to another person, or another situation, or another object, or it could be even the weather. You know, so we get angry at anything and everything. We get angry at God for things that didn't go right. But as we have studied in the law of karma, whatever goes right or wrong in my life, it is my own doing. It is my own actions. The law of karma, which we won't talk into much detail. But the point of the matter is that anger is directed either at myself, which is self-destructive, because then I'm constantly getting upset, or my anger gets directed at another person or a situation. And then I say things I didn't mean, I become hateful, I become spiteful, and then you cannot take it back. You say, I'm sorry, in anger I, you know, called you this or said this, but the words cannot be taken back. It's like an arrow. Once it is shot, or a bullet, you cannot withdraw it. It will reach its target and do its damage. So angry words, when they are spoken, they cannot be withdrawn. So one has to be very careful that if I did not get something, maybe I didn't deserve it. Maybe I didn't put enough effort. Maybe next time I should run faster. Next time I should study better. If I didn't get an A+, or next time I should do better in my business. And if the desire gets fulfilled, then it leads to greed. I want more and more, more and more. Of course, most of you are students and are beginning your life, and you want more. You want to be successful. You want to be the best in your class, and then you want to go to a good postgraduate program, and then you want to become a professional or a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or an accountant or even any kind of business you want to do. You want to, you know, become a successful teacher or, you know, professor. So all these goals you have, but the goals should be honest. The money should be, when I start going out and earning money, it should be done honestly, it should be done with hard work. And the money that is properly earned, and then a part of that should be used for service of society. Because society has given me so much, the teachers have given me so much, God has given me so much. So I should do some amount of service, not only with my money, but if I don't have money sometime, if I have time, maybe go out and build a house or volunteer in a library or a nursing home or a hospital, with the idea that I'm giving back to society whatever I have. And we find that excessive money, especially when it is not earned properly, can lead to a lot of catastrophe. You say, how can I do that? But think about people who have won the lotteries. And I read a recent article where they said that 95% of people, or 99% almost, it was over 95%, after winning the lottery, within a few years, were more miserable than they were before. Why? Because suddenly they got this money and they started spending it on wine and drugs and this and that and, you know, house. And then not only that, but then they get fear. Why? Because now suddenly your friends show up from somewhere whom you had never seen before. And your distant relative, you know, I'm your uncle's cousin. Okay, he'll show up. You know, why? Because you want, and then you are always worried. Even your friends, you become suspicious. Is this person really my friend, or is he my friend because I have money? So wealth, if it is properly used, can make your life better and make your society around you. But if the wealth is not properly used, and we find that gangsters and criminals, they have money too. But what do they use the money for? For doing more, you know, illegal activities, expanding their empire, just as a businessman wants to expand his business, Microsoft or Apple. So similarly, these crooks also, they also have their area of influence. Okay, I'm covering Southeast Bakersfield and nobody can come here, you know, these Blood and Crips and all. And then they want to expand, you know, so then they get money and then they hire hitmen to kill. So money or desire can breed anger, can breed jealousy, can even breed fear. Fear of others and fear of, that's why then people, then suddenly now I have, previously when he was living in a small house, he was fine. But now he has money, now he has to have a, you know, double wall, and then he has to have a gate and has to have alarms and cameras and have a security guard. Why? Because he's afraid that somebody will come. So they say that the way to control desire is to have your facts correct. Why did this negative thought arise in my mind? So go to the basis of the thought. And most of the time we find that the desire comes out of feeling that I am not good enough. And by getting this particular object, I'll be complete. So have your facts correct. And once you have the facts, go to the bottom. Suppose suddenly an angry thought comes, or a jealous thought comes, or a negative thought comes, then go to the basis of that. And you'll find that the basis of all that is wrong desire. So go to the bottom of the thought, and then only you can eliminate it. And that's why we say that in meditation, we go to the core of our being, which is the God's presence within, which we call as life, call as consciousness, call as the inner self, the inner silence. So once you reach that, once you attain that through meditation, through right knowledge, then you can eliminate all these negative tendencies from the root, and then they will never arise. And the most important point in this whole situation, of course, anywhere in life, that you have to lift yourself by yourself. I think, I don't know if any of you have studied the Bhagavad Gita in the religious class, but Dr. Betty, of course, has taught that many times. In the sixth chapter, it says, Udaret atmanatmanam na atmanam avsadayet. Lift yourself by yourself. Nobody will come and lift you. A teacher or a guru or a priest or a monk or even your parents, they can give you advice. They can tell you what is right and what is wrong. But ultimately, I have to, they say, you know, lift myself by my bootstraps. So I have to decide that what is the goal of my life? Where am I going? What is my purpose? That's why our founder, Swami Chinmayananda, says, he says, enter life with a mission, with a vision. So I should have a mission in life. I should have a vision in life. I should have a goal in life. And it should be higher than just acquiring money and having a family and a girlfriend and a boyfriend and a children and house. That is all necessary. Of course, one needs to have a house and a family and car and all that. But my vision of life should be higher, should be a greater goal than just me, myself, and my family. And that is how much I can do for others. How can I make this world a better place? They say once you came into this world, and after you leave, people should say he left this world a little bit better than when he came. Not left it the same or left it worse. There are some people who are criminal and crooks. When they leave, people say, thank God he left. No, it is true. You know, if some real criminal dies, you know, I mean, people don't really, maybe his close family may, but so that's why they say leave the world a little bit better than when you found it. I came to this world, I came here with God's grace, and let me, through my actions, make this world better. And that is what all these great saints and prophets did. Look at Jesus and Buddha and Guru Nanak and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Saint Francis and Mother Teresa. All of them came, all of them were humans like you and me, but they decided that I have a vision in life, I have a goal, and that is to make this world a better place. And for that, you need right knowledge, and you need purity of mind. They are like two wings. Just as a bird with one wing cannot fly, a man with one leg, you know, really cannot walk. If there is a chariot or a cart, it has only one wheel, it will fall. So similarly, we need both knowledge and purity. You need the right knowledge through the scriptures, through listening to wise people. And the other wing of this bird is purity of mind. So as you develop purity of mind, as you become a better individual, and you have the right knowledge, then you can soar to great heights. Then you can become a Martin Luther King. You can become a Mahatma Gandhi. You can become Nelson Mandela. You can become anything you want to be. But you have to have these two things. Even in the world, to be successful in business or in my profession, knowledge will take you so far. Yes, if you can be very successful. But if your heart is not pure, if you do not have the right values, sooner or later you will get into trouble. No matter how successful you are, but if you are dishonest and if you are cheating others and if you are taking advantage, then hurting others, then sooner or later your empire will collapse. So this in brief is, we talked about purification of mind and how to develop these positive qualities. I hope this helps you somehow, somewhat a little bit in your work and in your studies. We do have time for questions or comments. So very, very good question. Thank you for asking. Fear comes from two situations. One is a fear of somebody else. Generally, it is a fear of somebody else. Like I'm walking at night and I see a shadow, I'm afraid, or I'm afraid that this person will take this from me or will do this from me. So fear, one is fear from outside. And fear only comes from another. That is number one. When it comes from another, so why do I fear somebody else? Because I feel this person is separate from me. Is not me. I fear people from a particular religion or a particular race or a particular community or a particular part of town. You know, I'm driving in a So how do you overcome that fear? By seeing God in all. That I am a divine creature and everybody is God's creation. They're all God's children. Nobody has not been created by God. And we are there all, just as there's one Father, so we are all brothers and sisters. So we are all children of that one reality. And when you see that oneness, and that's what Jesus said, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. He didn't say love thy Christian neighbor. He said love thy neighbor, whoever that neighbor is. So when you love another person spontaneously, and see the oneness, that there is only one God, and all of us have originated from that one source, just as from the sun all the rays of sunlight come, and so we are all rays of that one divine consciousness. So the moment you do that and you have spontaneous love, then the fear of the second, of the other, goes away. So that is the main cause. So by seeing the reality that there is only one God and we are all, just as from one mud, all the pots are created out of one mud. There may be different shapes and colors and size. There may be a cup and a saucer and a plate and a jar and a vase, but they're all actually mud. If you focus on the vase and the pot and the jar, then you will see the differences. But if you realize that they all came from mud, one clay, then you see the oneness. So that is number one. The second is fear comes from within, unexplained. Suddenly it arises. And a lot of times they say that it could be childhood, you know, situations. Maybe you were got afraid of something, of the dark or of some person or whatever. Or a lot of times we also say that this unexplained fear can come from vasanas, from previous tendencies, which I have cultivated in this life. And if you believe in rebirth, which we can talk about that in a separate talk, we don't have time. But they say that we could have created these vasanas or these negative tendencies in our previous births. And so, because of that, either from this life itself, could be childhood or could be from previous birth, but I have this inner insecurity which creates this sudden fear, which is not related to situation. Everything is fine. My life is going well. And that can be again overcome by breathing, by meditating, and by discovering that there is an inner peace, an inner silence, an inner joy. And as you meditate, the more you meditate and the more you go inwards, you will find a great sense of peace and joy. And then that fear will go away right away. I mean, there have been people who have been coming to this class who were on several different psychiatric medicines and had serious emotional issues. But through regular meditation and practice and understanding, you can overcome all these negativities. So I think by seeing the reality in all, and also seeing the reality in me, that I am God's child, I am God's manifestation. So I'm perfect, I'm good, I'm not evil, I'm not bad, I'm not. So seeing the reality, that's why I say bhayam tattva avamarshanat. By seeing the reality within and without, seeing God's presence, you can overcome fear. I think, like you said, you answered it correctly, that first of all, one has to be cautious. One has to be alert in life, especially for girls, because, you know, life is more difficult. Situations are harder. And so you have to be a little bit alert about your surroundings. Like they say, you know, be careful where you park your car, and be careful, have, you know, and then don't go to get single, you know, go in pairs, and because there is always strength in that. So yes, you know, that kind of fear, definitely, and they teach that. And then if you find a fearful situation, you can either run away from it, or you can avoid it, or, you know, if possible, maybe have a phone where you can call 911, or have a mace, you know, that there's nothing wrong with that. Because if you are faced with that situation where, you know, your life or your, you know, is in danger, then whatever means it takes. But I think that is just by using common sense, that what am I doing and where am I doing? And if there is a particular person that is habitually harassing you or, you know, molesting or bothering or upsetting, then avoid that situation as much as possible. Stay away from that. But without hating that individual, without hating that person, because when you develop hatred or anger, even for a negative person, what you're doing is feeding that negativity. Because that person is harassing me, bothering me, then I become angry, then I feed on that. But if I develop spontaneous love, I say, okay, even if this person is doing wrong things, there is a God up in heaven who is the law of karma, will take care of him. And nobody can escape the law of karma. If somebody has done wrong things, no matter how hard he tries, it's 100%. You do 10 wrong things, you get 10 wrong results. You do 10 good things, you get 10 good results. The law of karma, nobody can escape. So karma will take care of him. It could be the law of the land. You know, if somebody is doing that, it can, the police can take him. But inside, I should not have any hatred, because all I'm doing is I'm just feeding the negativity and unnecessarily upsetting my mind. So I think, but that's a very good point. Thank you. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Should one stop meditating and relax and then meditate?
Well, I think if the mind is running too much, you know, in meditation, first of all, when I sit for meditation, what we say is that give up all your identifications. I am not Jesse. I'm not a man. I'm not an employer. I'm not a husband. I'm not a father. I'm not a child. I am nobody. I'm a seeker of truth. So when I sit down, I take off all the clothes, the layers of clothes I have put on. I'm a man. I'm a father. I'm an employer. I'm an employee. I'm a husband. I'm a daughter. I'm a child. Whatever I am. So drop all your roles. Just as an actor puts on different clothes for different roles, so we put on different clothes. So drop all your roles and then sit down as a seeker of truth. And at that time, try as much as possible not to have. But the thoughts will come. You know. So like I said, who gives power to the thought, to the mind? I do. I am responsible for my mind racing. In this book, if you read the commentary by Swamiji, who has written this, he says, like somebody's leg is shaking. He says, my leg is shaking. Stop it. He said, you are the one that gave power to the leg, and you are telling somebody else to stop the leg. You are so similarly, the mind, I am the one giving power. So become aware that I have power over my mind. And as you become aware and you start watching the mind, they say that don't be too close and don't be too far. Like if I'm taking a picture, and if I'm too close, it's going to be out of focus. Or if I'm too far away and I'm taking a picture of a bird sitting, you know, half a mile, you cannot see. You have to be the right distance to focus. So the mind, if I'm too much close to it and involved, then the mind disturbs me. Or if I'm too far, I don't even think about the mind, then it won't help. So have a healthy distance from the mind and watch the mind, and you will find that you can quieten the mind. That's a good question. Thank you.